JC Corcoran Podcast.
I banged you here,
I nailed you there,
and on this couch,
and in this chair,
in the doorway,
the hallway,
on every stair,
we tapped that ass all over this house. Sometimes him, sometimes me,
though never simultaneously,
but one of us was hitting it usually.
We tapped that ass all over this house.
You'll never escape us, 'cause we live in your head. Just two swell dudes that you screwed here
and here
and there
and here
and even occasionally in your bed.
That bed is really uncomfortable,
right? It's like a prison cot.
On the stove,
over the sink,
and sort of in the fridge one time, I think.
And then we hit the back patio.
That's where we hit your back patio.
We tapped that ass all over this house.
How many times did we tap that behind?
Well, let's estimate.
On an average day, I would have to say 5, 6, 7, 8.
What? Too cheeky?
Hey, does this ring a bell?
A little to the left.
Okay now. A little to the right.
Wait. Back to the left.
Right there.
No, you're doing it wrong. I'll do it myself.
Barkeep, what's on tap?
It's me and my ass.
Ooh, sounds refreshing.
On the table, you were willing and able.
On the ottoman, you took a lot of men.
And on the safe in the closet, I made a deposit.
I also tapped that ass all over this house.
Let's wrap this up with a big finish!
But where should we finish?
Please, not on my chest. No, you'll scratch it!
On the accent wall.
On the bathroom floor.
You didn't care where.
You just wanted more.
How much more tamper could one ass endure?
We tapped that ass.
Tap that ass.
Tap that ass.
Tap that ass.
We tapped that ass all over this house.
I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest disc jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
Hi, kids. It is the Friday, May 21st, 2021 edition of the J.C. Corcoran Podcast here at jcontheline.com. 26 years ago today, I can tell you where I was. I was over in Metro East on the boat because Sirigul and Mujibur from The Late Show with David Letterman were in town, part of a Goodwill ambassadorship all over the country. And so, you know, they do a rehearsal at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And there they are in their black suits and their white shirts, and they're both standing there. And they got earpieces in, and there's Dave at the other end. And they just basically check the hook up and make sure that the shot is nice. Dave likes that shot from Metro East on the boat across, and then you see the arch in downtown and everything like that. And so Dave insisted that that be the shot that they use. And so I was hanging out with them, and we interviewed them, and they also showed up at Busch Stadium and took a little batting practice and stuff like that to see Mujibur in a black suit in a batting helmet with a bat standing at home plate at Busch Stadium is actually just funny alone. You don't have to do anything. And the act, by the way, if you always wondered, because, you know, it was always Sirigul living in the shadow of Mujibur. And when they did their very first live shot with Letterman, Mujibur actually stood in front of Sirigul. And that's really what made the whole thing sort of take off. And they're pretty much like that. But very, very nice guys. And at one point, well, actually, now that I think about it, the other one they did on Pants Across America, they brought Casey Kasem to St. Louis. And in that particular instance, Casey was late, and they were trying to do the rehearsal about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So I picked up the earpiece, and they said, just go stand there. And so I stood there, and I put the earpiece in, and they go, can you hear? And blah, blah, blah. Yeah, yeah, I can hear fine. And all of a sudden, he's like, hello? And I'm like, hello? And it was Letterman. It was Dave on the other end of the earpiece. He was sitting there at the desk. And he was asking me about the flood in St. Louis, and so we had a little chit-chat there. You got to be in the right place at the right time. And by the way, it was hot. It was hot. And these two guys are standing there in those black suits. I don't know how they survived that day in St. Louis 26 years ago today. Unfortunately, today is it's tomorrow, the 10th anniversary. Is it today or tomorrow? Hold on. 21. Yeah, it's today, the 10th anniversary of the Joplin tornado. I suspect the television newsrooms, and maybe to some extent, maybe even some national media, it depends on what else is going on, what sort of a news day it is. Maybe there'll be some sort of commemoration of it. I'm sure the Weather Channel will do something. But man, oh man, if you were around for that, you remember it and the devastation. I mean, when the hospital pretty much gets blown over, you know, you got trouble. I think it was 183 people. Odd that I would remember that number. I think it's 183 people that died in the Joplin tornado. That was on a Sunday evening. I still remember it. And a couple of St. Louis Cardinals, I want to say David Freese was one of them, showed up later on in the week to just basically sort of spread a little goodwill and let these people know whose homes, whose entire community, whose entire town had been flattened, just to give them a little moral support. And there really wasn't much for them to be able to do, stand around, and you could just tell by the shocked expressions on their faces of a couple of Cardinals that went out there. There's no words. There's no appropriate reaction. You're just sort of standing there numb watching all of this. But yeah, 10 years ago today, the Joplin tornado. Our buddy Smash has been in town, when I say in town, the Tampa area, which is why I am right now. I'll be back in St. Louis in a couple of weeks, though. But Smash has been in town, so we've been showing him the beauty of the Central Florida coast, and we've been comparing stories and everything like that. He was telling a story at dinner the other night about, we got into this discussion about, this was on the air years ago, it was Smash and I were doing some sort of show together. It turned to the topic of, have you ever almost been killed? Just one of those dark days. You know, have you ever almost been killed? And Close was telling a story about he got caught in the crossfire of a gunfight at a gas station in South St. Louis. And he just sort of hit the deck and there's like bullets flying over the top of him. John Eula had almost had his legs cut off. He was at a gas station pumping gas. And he was standing behind his car, and a guy pulled up behind him to use the pump behind him. And something happened, and the guy hit the gas instead of the brakes. John had just moved away from the back of the car to the side of the car when this guy hit the wrong pedal and smashed John's car in the rear. And had John still been standing there like he was 5 seconds ago, it would have cut his legs right off. I told the story about how I'd been run off the road on Christmas night, 1977. I was driving from Chicago to Fort Wayne, Indiana on Highway 30 heading eastbound just along the bottom of Lake Michigan. And a guy was coming the wrong way on Highway 30 in Valparaiso, Indiana. And I jerked the wheel to the left and just missed him by a couple of feet. And went down an embankment. And the weird part about it was apparently the cars that were going by saw all of this, and people stopped, pulled off the road, and came running down the hill, down the embankment, because they thought that we had hit, and they were running down to make sure I was all right. Well, here's the problem. It was Christmas night, and I'm going back home. I was living in Fort Wayne. And my mother had given me all sorts of leftovers, turkey and gravy and stuffing and mashed potatoes and all that. And all that was sitting on the front seat of the car. So these people come running down, complete strangers, coming down to make sure I was all right. And they pop open the door, the dome light goes on, and there's turkey and stuffing and gravy all over everything. And they were like, are you... what the hell you got going on in here? And I was sort of in shock, and they thought that we hit. So that was my story. But Smash's story was the best of all. He was before, yeah, I guess he was like 20 years old, 19, 20 years old. And he's singing with the band, and you're up on stage, and some gal who's shaking her ass right in front of the stage, she's dancing away, and she's making googly eyes at Smash, and Smash starts making googly eyes at her, and she starts making googly eyes back. And okay, all right, so now it's the break during the band. It takes the break, and the boyfriend of the girl who'd been making eyes at him challenges Smash to a fight in the parking lot. So Smash goes out there and apparently beats the snot out of this guy, comes back into the club, and I don't know, a couple of minutes later, he hears somebody yell, "He's got a gun." And so Smash goes hauling ass down the hallway of this club, just looking for anywhere. He ends up hiding under the desk of the manager of the club. He's hiding there, and he hears the guy come in. The door flies open. And he knows it's that guy. And the guy's got a gun. He's trying to shoot him. And by that time, the cops had already been called. The cops told the guy to drop the gun, and he wouldn't. And they talk about improvising. For some reason, one of the cops grabbed a fire extinguisher off the wall, hit the guy in the back of the head, knocked him out. And they took him into custody. Smash got out from underneath the manager of the club's desk. As Marv Albert would say, the wild and the woolly. Show business news, Angelina Jolie, who doesn't do anything normal, got covered in bees to celebrate World Bee Day, but one got up her dress and started crawling up her leg toward the promised land, and she said, "I thought, oh, this is the worst place to get stung," end quote. Here's something I didn't know. There's a new documentary about A-ha, you know, the band A-ha and Take On Me, and how they went from Norway to international fame thanks to their hit song. But it's also about the fact that all three members cannot stand one another, even though they're still together as a band. They all arrive separately. They all have separate dressing rooms. The only time they see one another is when they're on stage performing. And beyond that, they got nothing to do with one another. If you have Apple TV Plus, there's a special that starts running today. It's called 1971, The Year That Music Changed Everything. It's 8 episodes. It's a documentary series that uses archival footage and interviews focusing on the politics and the music of 1971. I will definitely be checking that out. That oddly sexy young woman who starred in the series The Queen's Gambit is hosting Saturday Night Live tomorrow night. That's the season finale. Got the 19th season finale of American Idol Sunday night. It's supposed to have lots of guests. 32nd season finale of The Simpsons Sunday night on Fox. No real time with Bill Maher. He's still got the COVID. I guess he tested positive, even though he was vaccinated. He tested positive and has no symptoms and nothing like that. They got to quarantine him for another week. They think they'll be back next week. Birthdays this weekend. Today, Judge Reinhold from, oh my gosh, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, Beverly Hills Cop, that sort of stuff. He's 64 today. Mr. T, 69. Al Franken, 70. Birthdays tomorrow. Naomi Campbell, that little anger ball, is 51. Bernie Taupin, Elton John's songwriting partner, 71. Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, is 79. Lived right down the street from my high school girlfriend on the southwest side of Chicago. Sunday birthdays, Jewel, the well-chested singer of Who Will Save Your Soul, 47. Ken Jennings from Jeopardy, 47. Drew Carey, who's doing The Price is Right right now, is 63. On Fridays, we'd like to do nerd news, all of the scientific achievements that are going unnoticed by people like you and me who have no connection to the scientific community and space news. Well, there's a bunch of stuff. Let's start with Australia first. Study on Australia found there are roughly 50 billion birds in the world. That's about 6 birds for every human. Study at the University of East Carolina found the wicked stepmother myth is exactly that, just a myth. Stepparents don't usually antagonize their stepkids, and having another role model around can be a good thing. Do you ever diagnose yourself online? Google working on a new AI tool that can analyze photos and correctly diagnose 288 different skin conditions, ranging from acne to melanoma. They start rolling it out later this year. In other health news, experts now recommend that we start getting screened for colon cancer at the age of 45 instead of 50. And a study on science itself just came out. The annual State of Science survey found 89% of people worldwide feel more hopeful for the future because of science. Apparently, they did not take that survey in the red states, proving again that men have no taste whatsoever. 20% of men say the classic hairstyle they want to see make a comeback is the 80s mullet. They also say the biggest celebrity hair inspiration is Jason Momoa, who does not have a mullet. I don't play the lottery, but maybe I should. I don't know. You can't win if you don't play. Remember the slogan? Since 2004, listen to this. Since 2004, at least 146 Americans have hit the lottery using numbers they got from fortune cookies. And 93% of them hit for $100,000 or more. The 146 tickets won a total of $406 million. It's an average of about $2.8 million each. Most states have at least one lottery winner who got their numbers from a fortune cookie. But South Carolina ranks first with 15 winning tickets where people got the numbers from fortune cookies. Pennsylvania, 13. Tennessee, 12. This is all according to a fortune cookie marketing company called Open Fortune. They also revealed which fortune cookie numbers have been the luckiest. The six numbers associated with the most winners are 4, 14, 15, 22, 26, and 28. And you can roll that back yourself, or I can just read them again. You can write them down real fast and go ahead and play today. 4, 14, 15, 22, 26, and 28. And now this.
And here he is, the Hall of Fame voice of the St. Louis Cardinals, Jack Buck, with our seventh inning stretch.
Broadcaster Jack Buck.
Hi, folks. How you doing? How do you like the color of this jacket? Holy cow! It's the Cardinals and the Cubs. I never thought I would ever do this. Let's sing this song for the greatest rivalry in the history of baseball, the Cardinals and the Cubs. A one, a two, a three. Take me out to the ballpark. Take me out with the crowd. Some peanuts and I don't care if I ever get back to that baby room, room. For the Cardinals, if they don't win, it's a shame. For it's one, two, three strikes, you're out. And the
Jack Buck was such a pro. He had him, then he lost him, but then he got him back. Big Cubs-Cardinal weekend. I took my dad to Cooperstown to the Baseball Hall of Fame on this date back in 2002. Best way, I get questions about this all the time. JC, I know you went, it's sort of an out-of-the-way place. What's the best way to do it? It's actually pretty simple. You fly in to Albany, very small airport, and then you grab a car and you're going to drive about an hour and a half to Cooperstown, but it is worth the trip. First of all, Cooperstown, absolutely beautiful. That's number one. Big lake right there. Lots of stuff to do, not just at the actual Baseball Hall of Fame, but there's lots of shops and bed and breakfasts and very quaint little village there in Cooperstown. And then the actual time that you spend at the Baseball Hall of Fame, I'd give it 2 days. First of all, there's plenty to see that would take up, you know, the better part of two afternoons. If you try to do it in one day, you're going to be rushing, you're not going to see everything, and you're going to be saying to yourself, I should have done what he said, I should have plotted out 2 days here. So that would be my advice. Johnny Carson did his last Tonight Show on this date back in 1992. I did my first professional radio show out of college because I had worked while I was in college, so I didn't really count it as my professional career until I had already graduated, and now I'm working and this is the, I'm fully supporting myself in the broadcast industry, a little radio station called WYFE in Rockford, Illinois, on this date back in 1975. This is one of my favorite stories. In 1997, I had just moved into a new house, moved into Brentwood. And I call up at the time what was TCI cable. It's okay, you know, install the cable here, whatever. And this was the Friday going into the Memorial Day weekend. And they send me a kid who's about 22, and he's going to hook up my cable. Now, I need a splitter because I need the cable to go to one TV in this one room, but then I had a second TV back then, and I needed a splitter to do that. So he gets the splitter, a little metal box, and you stick the coax in one side, coax in the other side, then run that one to one TV, one to the other TV. Everything is fine. This guy's working a little fast. He says it's his last appointment of the day because he's meeting his buddies at the Lake of the Ozarks for the holiday weekend. And he seems like he's working a little fast and a little sloppy. You know, it's almost like his buddies were out in front of my house beeping the horn, like, come on, let's go. You know, I could tell the guy couldn't wait to get out of there. And you can't blame him. He's like 22. He's meeting his buddies at the lake, and that's fine. But just, you know, I'm going into a long holiday weekend here. Just hook up my cable. Everything's fine. That's your job, by the way. So could you just do your job first and then you could go? So he's rushing and he's rushing. And I'm like, I know how to do the rest of this. Tell you what, just go ahead. I'll hook up the rest of it. You go ahead, take off. I got it from here. Are you sure? Yeah, it's fine. All you got to do is take the coax out and put it in the back of the TV. Everything's fine. All right, so go ahead. I'll take care of the rest. Boom, he's gone. I go in back of the TV. I take the coax, the little pin coming out of the end of the cable, and it touches the metal box and goes, boom! And there's smoke coming off the metal box. And it actually takes some of the silver finish off of the metal box. Just burns it right off. Oh, and by the way, did I mention it blew out the entire system? And so now I'm sitting there going into the long holiday weekend with no television. So I call up TCI. I'm like, you sent a guy out here. And he hooked up everything. But as soon as the cable touched the box, it exploded and produced smoke and the whole thing. And they're like, that's impossible. There's no electricity going through the coax. I'm like, I know there's not supposed to be, but obviously there was. And not until they came out like the following Tuesday. I'm going the whole weekend without TV. They come out there and they're like, well, there's no elect. They're like, oh, I'll be damned. You're right. I was like, of course. What do you think? I just made it up. And they saw how the plating had been burned in the explosion right there. Don't ever rush through a job, especially when it involves anything involving cable or electronics or anything like that, please. Oh, and this is the anniversary back in 1986 of the day when we were on Keishi and we did the 410 nicknames for the male reproductive organ. This bit caught the attention of then Senator John Danforth from the great state of Missouri, who went out onto the Senate floor and was talking about us, I guess, about how we did this completely vile, filthy bit on the radio. It was just cute. Come on. Trouser Snake, Helmet Head, Kojak, Eye Without a Face. These are the ones I remember just off the top of my head. Bad choice of words.
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the crowd by. Me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back with a root. Root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame.
Big Cub Cardinal weekend, as we were talking about just a little while ago. Ben Hockman is the beat writer for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. He is on the road with the Cardinals. He is the guy that gives you the running account along with the other sports guys. You know, I got a lot of problems with the Post-Dispatch, but their sports department tends to be pretty good. You may disagree, but I think Ben Hockman's a really, really good writer. He's a great guy, by the way. His wife is real nice, real pretty. She's a new mom and everything. He's a new dad. Now, he's got a new book. We're going to be having him on the air to talk about it, the ideal stocking stuffer for for Father's Day coming up in a few weeks. He's got a brand new book, and we're going to have him on to talk about that. But in 2018, he had his first book, and it's all about the Cardinals. So we flash back 3 years ago to our conversation with Ben Hockman of the Post-Dispatch, our JC Celebrity A-List interview of the day. First question I got is somebody who's written 2 books. I found it a very intense process. What did you find was the difference between writing a book compared to writing a daily column?
That's a great question. For me, it's stories that I've gathered in my head, even in my single-digit age years, you know, always thinking like, man, that's a fun story I've always wanted to tell. And then it's just like a huge puzzle that you're putting together and taking a story you remember from when you were 9 and a story you remember when you were 19 and put them together. And then I did a bunch of research and interviews too. I basically used this book as an excuse to interview all the famous St. Louisans I'd never met. So that was kind of fun, interviewing the John Hamms of the world and Ellie Kemper and Jenna Fisher, and then took their stories and pieced it together. And, oh, by the way, I interviewed some baseball players, too.
Yeah, it would be nice to get them in, too. When you're writing a book, and especially when you have a finite number of stories that you're going to tell, in this case, the Big 50, St. Louis Cardinals, the men and the moments that made the St. Louis Cardinals. You're sitting there, okay, well, now you're sitting there with 150 things that you want to tell, and you got to boil it down to 50. You know, you're probably sitting there going, well, you know, the signing of Will Clark and Larry Walker, that was probably pretty big. Moving the Cardinals spring training facility from St. Petersburg to Jupiter, that was huge. And yet, those things probably didn't make the cut. What did you feel most conflicted about leaving on the table?
I like that Will Clark reference, too. People forget how important he was to that team. Yeah, well, here's the thing, though, about the book. I was able to sort of answer your questions. I was able to consolidate a lot of things. Like, if I had like 4 or 5 things, oh, let's just do a whole chapter on the 1987 season. And then I can, you know, weave in 6 or 7 things I wanted. But the book was fun because the first 20 or so are standard chapters that you would expect in a Cardinal book. And I wanted to write a book that hadn't been written before, so a lot of news stories. But, you know, there's the Stan Musial chapter, the Ozzie Smith chapter, the Bob Gibson chapter. But then I got into it, and I was like, you know what, I want to do a chapter about Vince Coleman's drunken live interview on Channel 5 in 1987. So I did a whole chapter on that, and the Tom Lawless bat flip, and a lot of the fun, quirky things. You're even in the book, you know, talking about the Mets are pond scum.
I didn't know I was in your book.
Yeah, man. Yeah, you're definitely in there. And, yeah, you probably remember when you rented the airplane, and it said the Mets are pond scum flying over the stadium, and Tommy Herr was at bat, and he looks up, and they paused the game because of that. Fun stuff like that. I wanted to make sure it was in the book.
Wow, I had no idea. I'll tell you a little bit, a piece of trivia about that whole thing. The actual idea was the idea of Kathy Kelly, the daughter of the late, great St. Louis Blues broadcaster Dan Kelly, and she worked in our promotion department at KSD back in the day, and it was her idea. She says, why don't we rent a plane and have it say JC says the Mets are pond scum? So when I was called into the box, I was actually at the game, and I was sitting in my seat, and Nancy McElroy, who was our liaison with the Cardinals, you know, in the media, and Nancy came to my seat and tapped me on the shoulder and said, Dal would like to see you in his office. And so I was escorted into the bowels of Busch Stadium, where a then general manager, Dal Maxville, was sitting behind his desk with steam and, I believe, lava coming out of his ears. And and he's sitting there, and in the course of about 30 seconds, he went from white hot to very, very cool, and then calmly just basically said, JC, I just had to come from the Mets dugout where I had to apologize. We appreciate your fervor and your enthusiasm, but you got to figure out a way to do it so that it doesn't present problems for us like this. He just could have sheared my head off right at the shoulders. And instead, I walked in, he was mad. But by the time, you know, we sat there for a couple of minutes, he was fine. And then at spring training the following year, my whole contingent of people, it was like 7 or 8 people, just by happenstance, we ended up in the same restaurant, a couple of tables away from one another. And his party left maybe 20 minutes before we did. And when we asked for the bill, we were told that Dal had picked it up. So, you know, there was never any hard feelings or anything like that, but it presented a really bizarre situation. But I could tell you stories for 2 hours. It popped up on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. It popped up in comic strips. It popped up all over the place.
This is funny. I've never told you this story. I think you had a book coming out about that same time and the T-shirts, and you were at the radio station you were at the time, and my mother, who's a big fan of yours, she went to the station to get me one of the shirts because I was a student at Mizzou, and she was going to get the shirt. But coincidentally, she was also going to your book signing that weekend, and she ran into you, and not that you're going to remember this, but she runs into you in the hallway of the station, and my mom is goofy like I am, and she goes, I'm going to go to your book signing. You don't know who I am. I'm going to your book signing on Saturday, and I'm going to be with two friends. Can you do me this favor? When I come up to you, can you pretend like you know me and say my name? Like, hey, good to see you again. It would impress my friends. They would think that I'm friends with J.C. Corcoran. And you're like, sure, sure, let's pull this off. What's your name? And my mom, her name is Josette, which is not it's not Sarah. It's not a common name. And you're like, Josette? She's like, yeah, Josette, Josette. And you practice it a couple times. And you're like, all right, I'll do this. You know, a couple of days later, book signing, my mom sees you in the line, you're signing your books, you're doing your thing. Finally, you get up to the front, she gets up to you at the front, you look up, and you're like, Joselle! You got the name wrong.
It sounds like something stupid I would have done. Oh, my God, that's hilarious. Oh, God.
That's great, because... You're like, oh, there's that weird woman from the station the other day. I got to make it look like I'm friends with her. What was her name that I'd never heard before?
And he blows the line. Ah, for God's sakes. I'm such an amateur. You mentioned something a little while ago about awkward moments on TV about Vince Coleman's drunken interview. I think it was with Art. Was it with Art Holliday? I think it was with Art Holliday.
It was.
Yeah. I saw that. Here's one I'll just play this back down the line for you. It runs 1:12. Just enjoy this.
Good is a 1, 2, a 3 snakes to have at you.
As a pitcher, you always think that you can win games. You know, you always think you can, but you never know until you do it. And it's just a great year. You know, we had great defense all year. We've had great offense all year. And we've had a great catcher.
Hey, thank you, Garrett. Thank you, Garrett. Let's go back upstairs to Joe Buck.
There's a moment to remember, huh? We'll take a break, we'll come back, and all of our faces will return to their normal colors. It is a very special edition of the Regional Sports Report. That's cable. What the heck? Back in a minute.
Good is a 1, 2, a 3 stretch it out at you.
Garrett. Effing Stevenson right there. There he was on live TV. I think Danny Mac saw his whole career passing before his eyes as he was doing that post-game interview. And then, of course, they throw it back to Joe upstairs, and Joe just makes a joke out of the whole thing.
Right. That's hilarious. I'd never heard that. That's
yeah.
fun.
Oh,
that's
for the next book. Current situation is you do book signings. You got the big one coming up. As people come up to you, you've done a couple of book signings already. Do people, as sports fans in general, look at this as a troubled time? You look at Mizzou, the Blues, who are off to a very, very awkward start, and the Cardinals, who have not finished in the playoffs for 3 consecutive years now. We have no NFL franchise. I guess there's 2 ways of looking at this, but one of them is to definitely say we're looking at a sort of a rocky period if you're a St. Louis sports fan right now.
You're absolutely right, JC, and when you look at the Cardinals specifically, I mean, they haven't been in the playoffs for 3 years in a row now. That hasn't happened since 97 through 99, and we well know that that time was kind of a party time with McGuire, so maybe we weren't as frustrated when they missed the playoffs because we still got to experience 62 and 70 and all that. The frustration of the fan, if we're doing the psychology of it, it hasn't happened since basically 93 to 95, and that's a long time ago. And you think back to those AstroTurf days, those are some frustrating times, and the Cardinals are basically like the National League Seattle Mariners, this 80-win-plus team that just kind of hangs around, sort of good, not great. It's frustrating, and so this is the postseason, and this is the offseason, and of course a lot of the fans want Bryce Harper or maybe Manny Machado or something big, or at least something to prevent the Cubs from getting one of those players.
Give me one or two things as we wrap up here that people who pick up your book might be surprised to find in it.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to write a chapter that each chapter that they had never read before. So, I mean, you just pick one, like Stan Musial, for instance. I sat down with his grandson for a couple hours. We had some beers, and he told great stories about Stan. His name's Brian. Brian would go to dinner with Stan every single night towards the end there. And Brian was like, Grandpa, I love going to dinner with you, but I'm 20-something. I'd like to go on some dates. And Stan goes, bring her along. So he would bring these dates, these first dates. It would be Brian, the girl, and Stan, the man, at dinner. And I love that image. And so there's just fun, quirky stories that people hadn't heard before about their favorite players and favorite personalities.
The Big 50, the St. Louis Cardinals, the men and moments that made the St. Louis Cardinals with a forward by Tony La Russa. Not exactly slumming it here. Let me close with one thing that you may not have heard before. It's just a little something I put together from one of the last times Stan Musial spoke publicly.
I came to the plate 11,000 times. I got 3,630 hits. But I also made 7,000 outs, and that was a record. If you like somebody and admire them, don't hesitate to tell them that you love them. We love the great fans of St. Louis and Missouri. I appreciate this honor. Thank you very much. One more time. Here we go. One more time. One more time.
Man. Man, when he got the harmonica out, oh, man. Oh, man. What a period, huh?
Goosebumps on my arm. Very cool.
Ben Hockman, St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Good luck with the book. Again, The Big 50, The St. Louis Cardinals, The Men in Moments That Made the St. Louis Cardinals, forward by Tony La Russa, available wherever you get books and online and all that sort of stuff. Best of luck, Ben. Thanks.
Very fun. Thanks, man.
Very, very fun. I like that guy, Ben Hockman of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Now, again, you're going to be hearing him again. Either it's next week or the week after, we're going to have him on. He's got a brand new book about the 2011 season and David Fries. That's the brand new one. We'll have him on the air sometime in the next week or two as he plugs that book too, just in time for Father's Day. And that's it. We must leave you. The podcast has been completed. Have a great weekend. We are here every weekday morning. We post at 7 o'clock St. Louis time. You can download and listen whenever you want. And we are, I promise, working on the archival system. So if you miss a show, if you miss one of our podcasts, you can go back and binge them on the weekends or something like that. Continue, please, to spread the word that we are here every day, especially the people who used to listen to the old radio shows. And we'll be back on Monday. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.